Hello, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Cecilia, bringing you this week's Bedtime Stories program on Sun Sounds of Arizona. In today's program, we will read Lenny and Lucy, Streganona Meets Her Match, some of Frog and Toad All Year, and some of 26 Fairmont Avenue. Let's get started with Lenny and Lucy, written by Philip C. Stead, illustrated by Aaron E. Stead. Winding along a bumpy road through the dark, unfriendly woods, Peter said, "I think this is a terrible idea." And here we see a car, and there's a man driving, and in the back seat is a big dog, and Peter's looking out the window, and on top of the car are many packages and luggage. And when they'd finally left the woods and stood safely on the other side of the wooden bridge, Peter said, "This house is not as good as our old house. I want to go back." And there's Peter's dad, and he's carrying in boxes and packages into the house from the car. And there's Peter and the dog on the other side of the bridge. But no one heard except Harold, who was only a dog and couldn't do much about it, even though he wanted to. Harold was a good dog, and there's Peter's dad bending over and patting Harold on the head, and Peter is eating from a box of cookies and drinking some milk. At night, Peter and Harold looked from the upstairs window past the wooden bridge out to the dark woods. Terrible things hid in the trees. Neither Peter nor Harold slept at all. So the next day, Peter made a tall pile of pillows, and after they toppled the pile six times, Peter ran inside to find just the right blankets. He stitched and sewed and wrapped the pile up, tying it shut with a string. He pushed and pulled and kneaded the wrapped-up pillows like dough. And there's Peter. He's carrying a pile of blankets out toward there are blankets on the ground and a pile of pillows, and he's bringing more blankets, and there's Harold the dog carrying a pillow and walking behind Peter. And when he was done, he named it Lenny, guardian of the bridge. "Lenny will guard the bridge," said Peter, "and keep the dark woods on the other side where they belong." Harold wagged his tail. And there's Lenny, and he looks like a big, big snowman, but it's just the blankets and the pillows, and they're all bunched up, and he's dressed like a big snowman. Peter and Harold watch from the upstairs window. They felt safe knowing that Lenny was there. He guarded the bridge silently, patiently, but with no one to keep him company. "Do you think Lenny is lonely?" asked Peter. Then they worried about Lenny and his loneliness. And there's Peter and Harold, and they're looking out the window at Lenny, who's sitting out by the bridge. And no one slept at all. So the next day, Peter brought breakfast to Lenny, toast and jam and a glass of milk. Then Peter gathered all the leaves on the ground and made a tall pile. And after they'd leapt into the pile seven times, Peter ran inside to find just the right blankets. He pushed and pulled and kneaded the wrapped up leaves like dough. And there's Lenny sitting, and he's holding a glass of milk, and there's Peter holding a big pile of leaves, and Harold's on the ground playing in the leaves. When he was done, he named her Lucy, and Lucy was a good friend to Lenny. And now there's Lenny sitting like a big snowman, and next to him is Lucy. The leaves that were all bundled up, and the blankets, and and she's got a pink hat on and a pink dress, and they're sitting together. Everyone slept, and the dark wood stayed on the other side of the bridge where they belonged. And there's Lenny and Lucy at night sitting by the bridge, and there's an owl on top of the house. The next day, Peter, Harold, Lenny, and Lucy played a game of marbles. Harold was champion, everyone agreed. For lunch, they ate vegetable soup, and after soup, Peter began a collection of rocks. The others sat watching the woods and wondering about the things they couldn't see. "Have you ever seen an owl?" asked Millie. Millie lived next door. She had binoculars that everyone could share and a bag of marshmallows, too. And there's Lenny and Lucy, and Lenny is tipping his hat to Millie, and Harold the dog is standing next to Lenny. And Peter's there, and he's waving at Millie. And Millie's holding her binoculars, and she's holding a bag of marshmallows behind her back. "No," said Peter, "I have never seen an owl." Harold hadn't either. And here you see Millie, and she's patting Harold on the head. And Lenny's and Peter's eating some of the marshmallows. And Lucy's looking out of the binoculars. And there's Peter's house, and Peter's dad is at the door, and there's a woman coming over talking to Peter's dad, and she's bringing some coffee or tea over to his dad, and there's the owl sitting on the mailbox. So Peter, Harold, Lenny, Lucy, and Millie sat together, watching out for interesting things. Harold chased a squirrel or two. And all the while, even after the lights were out, the dark wood stayed on the other side of the bridge where they belonged. And there's the two houses. Millie is looking out of her house with a flashlight, and Peter and Harold are looking out the window of their house with their flashlight. And there's Lenny and Lucy guarding the bridge. The end. Next we'll read Strega Nona Meets Her Match by Tommy De Paola. Nothing much happened in the little town in Calabria where Strega Nona lived. At least nothing had happened since Big Anthony had left Strega Nona's magic pasta pot alone. Bambalona, the baker's daughter, was learning how to become a Strega too. She listened to everything Strega Nona told her, not like Big Anthony, who never listened to anyone. Bambalona kept everything running smoothly, so life was peaceful in Strega Nona's little house on the hill. Then one day, a letter arrived for Strega Nona. It was from Strega Amelia, who lived on the other side of the mountain. "Cara Strega Nona," the letter read, "I would like to pay you a visit. Would next week be convenient? Please let me know. Amor e baci, love and kisses, Strega Amelia." Strega Nona sat right down and wrote a letter telling Strega Amelia to come as soon as possible. Big Anthony and Bambalona helped Strega Nona get the house ready. They swept and polished and shook out the sheets. "I have so few visitors to stay, my children," Strega Nona told them. "It will be wonderful to have company. And Big Anthony, please try to behave and pay attention while Strega Amelia is here." "Ah, see, Strega Nona," Big Anthony answered. "I'll be so good you won't recognize me." "I'll believe that when I see it," Bambalona whispered to Strega Nona. "Shh, now be nice, Bambalona," Strega Nona whispered back. "Ciao, Cara," Strega Amelia called as she reached the top of the hill. "Ah, my dear friend," Strega Nona said. "Avanti, avanti, come in, come in." And there's Strega Nona, and she's a greeting Strega Amelia, and Strega Amelia has a big blue dress on with green stars and a blue hat. The two Stregas sat right down, put their heads together, and talked and laughed and gossiped until Bambalona came and stood in the doorway. "Ah, now, dear Amelia," Strega Nona said, "Bambalona has made a wonderful supper for us. Manja, eat." The next morning, Strega Nona was busy helping the townspeople came to her to cure their headaches, to find husbands, and to get rid of warts. Strega Amelia watched. "Goodness," she said to Big Anthony, "Strega Nona has un buen numero de clienti, a great number of customers. Is it always this way?" "Oh, see," Big Anthony answered, "sometimes it's even busier than this." "Per l'amor di Dio, for goodness sakes," Strega Amelia exclaimed. "I see she still uses the old-fashioned ways, too. I'll have to think about this." The next day, Strega Amelia went home. "Arrivederci, Strega Nona. Goodbye, Bambalona. Goodbye, Big Anthony," Strega Amelia called as she went down the hill. "Adio, Strega Amelia. Farewell," the three called back. A week later, when Big Anthony was feeding the goat, he looked out over the hillside and saw several carts coming into town. "Bambalona," he called, "come and look." "Why, it looks like it is," Bambalona said. "It's Strega Amelia. What's she up to?" "Let's ask Strega Nona," Big Anthony said. "No, let's go down and find out," Bambalona said, and they crept down the hill to see for themselves. They were back in no time. "Strega Nona, Strega Nona," Bambalona and Big Anthony called out, all out of breath. "What is it, my children?" Strega Nona asked. "You'll never guess. Read this," Bambalona handed Strega Nona a handbill. And there's a piece of paper, the handbill, and it says, "Opening tomorrow. Strega Amelia's helpful services. Husbands found for young ladies. Headaches cured. Warts removed. Other remedies. Latest scientific equipment. Free sweets and coffee with every visit." "Well," Strega Nona said, "I don't think there's anything to worry about." But Strega Nona was wrong. One by one, the townspeople started to go to Strega Amelia. Everyone got dolce or sweets and cappuccino for paying a visit. And indeed, she had the latest scientific equipment, strange-looking machines that did all kinds of things. The lines of people grew longer and longer. Strega Nona had met her match. Finally, one morning, not a single person came to Strega Nona's house, and it was that way for days and days. Poor Strega Nona. After 3 weeks, Strega Nona called in Bambalona and Big Anthony. "My children, I must talk with you. Mia Borsa, my purse, is empty. I won't be able to pay you anymore. I'm afraid there is no work here. You must go down to the town and see what you can find." And Strega Nona went back into her little house. The next morning, Bambalona was there as usual. "My papa can use some help in the bakery, Strega Nona, so I'll be all right. And I'll be able to come by a few days a week to help you too." "Ah, my sweet Bambalona, you are so good," Strega Nona told her. "But what about our Big Anthony?" "Here he comes now," Bambalona said. "Oh, Strega Nona, Bambalona, you'll never guess, I have a new job," Big Anthony shouted out, all smiles. "You don't have to sound so happy about it," Bambalona scowled. Now, Strega Nona said. "Tell us, Big Anthony, what is it?" "I'm going to work for Strega Amelia," Big Anthony exclaimed. "You're what?" Bambalona screamed. Stop, yelled Big Anthony. "Yes, Bambalona, stop," Strega Nona said. "I think that is wonderful, Big Anthony. When do you start?" "Today, Strega Nona, I have to run there right now. Wish me luck," Big Anthony said as he turned and ran down the hill. "Buon fortuna, good luck," Strega Nona called after him. How could he, the big ungrateful traitor, Bambalona fumed. "Oh, Big Anthony, you are such a help to me," Strega Amelia exclaimed as Big Anthony followed her around doing exactly what he was told. He polished the husband and wife machine. He filled up the wart cream jars. He stirred the hair restorer in the big pot on the stove. "Well, Big Anthony, business is booming," Strega Millie remarked one morning. "I had a feeling that people would like the modern ways, especially my headache machine. And now that you have been here a few weeks, I'm going to leave you in charge for a few days while I go over the mountain to get the rest of my equipment. Now sit down and listen carefully while I explain how to run everything." Big Anthony smiled. He was in charge. The first day he ran the husband and wife machine backward. "Oh, there's the boy and the girl, and they're by the machine, and then afterwards they have frowns on their faces because it didn't work." The second day he confused the wart cream with the hair restorer. And oh, there he is, and Big Anthony is using the cream and the hair restorer, but the man who needed the hair ends up with warts on top of his head, and the man with the warts has hair on his nose where his wart still is. Things weren't going too well. On the third day, the mayor arrived. "Buongiorno, Signor Mayor," Big Anthony said. "What can I do for you?" "Oh, Big Anthony," the mayor groaned. "I have a terrible headache. Strega Amelia's machine is a wonder. Strap me in." Big Anthony settled the mayor in the headache machine and picked up the diagram that showed how to work it. He looked at the diagram. It was very complicated, and it was upside down. Oh, and there's the mayor, and he's strapped in the chair with the headache machine on, and Big Anthony's turning on the machine, and then everything goes wrong. There's smoke all over, and the mayor has got a big frown on his face, and he looks uncomfortable because the machine wasn't working correctly. The next morning, all the townspeople were back at Strega Nona's. The mayor was the first in line. "Bambalona," Strega Nona said, "run down and get Big Anthony. We need him." When the carts came over the mountain with Strega Amelia in front, the townspeople were waiting at the town gate. "I'm sorry," the mayor told Strega Amelia, "but we all agree that we prefer the old ways. Our own Strega Nona is enough for us. We hope you have no hard feelings." "Arrivederci, Strega Amelia," Strega Nona said. "I'm sorry it didn't work out for you." "Arrivederci, Strega Nona," Strega Amelia said. "I must admit I am surprised. Everything was going so well. And as for your Big Anthony, I know you've had trouble with him, but I must tell you I couldn't have done it without him. He was such a big help." "He certainly was," Strega Nona said with a smile. And then you see Strega Nona and Bambalona standing next to each other smiling. And Big Anthony is standing over them. He's got his finger up to his mouth looking confused. And they're under a tree and there's a white dove sitting on the tree. The end. This is a reminder that you are listening to Bedtime Stories on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Let's read a chapter from Frog and Toad All Year by Arnold LaBelle. This chapter is called The Surprise. It was October. The leaves had fallen off the trees. They were lying on the ground. "I will go to Toad's house," said Frog. "I will rake all of the leaves that have fallen on his lawn. Toad will be surprised." Frog took a rake out of the garden shed. Toad looked out of his window. "These messy leaves have covered everything," said Toad. He took a rake out of the closet. "I will run over to Frog's house. I will rake all of his leaves. Frog will be very pleased." Frog ran through the woods so that Toad would not see him. And there's Frog carrying his rake. Toad ran through the high grass so that Frog would not see him. And there's Toad carrying his rake. Frog came to Toad's house. He looked in the window. "Good," said Frog. "Toad is out. He will never know who raked his leaves." Toad got to Frog's house. He looked in the window. "Good," said Toad. "Frog is not home. He will never guess who raked his leaves." Frog worked hard. He raked the leaves into a pile. Soon Toad's lawn was clean. Frog picked up his rake and started home. Toad pushed and pulled on the rake. He raked the leaves into a pile. Soon there was not a single leaf in Frog's front yard. Toad took his rake and started home. A wind came. It blew across the land. The pile of leaves that Frog had raked for Toad blew everywhere. The pile of leaves that Toad had raked for Frog blew everywhere. When Frog got home, he said, "Tomorrow I will clean up the leaves that are all over my own lawn." How surprised Toad must be. When Toad got home, he said, "Tomorrow I will get to work and rake all of my own leaves." How surprised Frog must be. That night, Frog and Toad were both happy when they each turned out the light and went to bed. The end. Now we'll read a chapter from 26 Fairmont Avenue by Tommy DePaola. Welcome to Tommy's childhood home. And here in the first pages, you see some pictures of Mom, Dad, Buddy, me, who's Tommy, Nana, Tom, Aunt Nell, Nana Fall River, Uncle Charles and Viva, the Morins, Mr. and Mrs. Crane, and Carol Crane. And then you see a house, and it's on, says Columbus Avenue, and there are people inside the house and children sitting on the steps. Chapter 1. I didn't always live in the house at 26 Fairmont Avenue. We moved there when I was 5 years old. I know that because in 1938, when I was still 4, a big hurricane hit Meriden, Connecticut, where we lived. We had just started to build our first and only house when people told Mom and Dad that the house was twisting and turning on its foundation, just like Dorothy's house in The Wizard of Oz. A real hurricane had never reached all the way up to New England before, so nobody was ready for it. We were living in an apartment on Columbus Avenue. We all lived on one floor. Another family lived upstairs, and we lived downstairs. It had been raining for days and days, and some of the rivers were overflowing. There was a really weird brook near our backyard. It was called Harbor Brook. It wound all the way through Meriden, and factories dumped stuff into it. It was different colors on different days. We were told not to go near it. Right before the hurricane, the water was so high and murky that I was hardly allowed to look at it, much less go near it. "Come away from there, Tommy," my mom would call. Right after lunch on the day of the hurricane, my mom was talking on the telephone when my dad came home early from the barber shop where he worked. My brother Buddy, who was 8, was at school. His real name was Joe Jr., after my father. Dad and Mom talked in the kitchen. Then Mom said to me, "Get your coat on, Tommy. We have to go pick up Buddy and some of the neighborhood children. There's a big storm coming, and they're letting everyone out early." We got in the car and drove to the school in the rain. A long line of cars and teachers with kids were waiting in front of the building. I looked up and saw something I've never, ever forgotten. A boy was standing at the top of the steps holding an umbrella. All of a sudden, a gust of wind blew, a really strong gust, and the boy went up, up, up in the air and floated down the stairs just like Mary Poppins. It was scary driving home to Columbus Avenue. The car filled with kids, Buddy, Carol Crane, my best friend on Columbus Avenue, who looked just like the child movie star Shirley Temple, only Carol had red hair and Shirley Temple was blonde. The Adams twins, the Fournier brothers, and a few others all talking and screaming. Branches fell off the trees. Leaves swirled around the car. A sign flew off Tomasetti's grocery store and just missed us. But we made it to our apartment. Mom let us out and we ran inside. Carol's mother, Mrs. Crane, was already there and she was really scared. Mrs. Crane was scared of storms, especially thunderstorms. If there was one clap of thunder, Mrs. Crane would be knocking on our door and calling my mother. "Floss, Floss," that was my mother's nickname for Florence. My mother liked being called Floss, but she liked Flossie even better. My mom would open the door, and Mrs. Crane would rush in, pushing Carol in front of her. Nothing would do except for my mom to get the bottle of holy water she'd gotten from St. Joseph's Church and sprinkle some of it on Mrs. Crane, who wasn't even Catholic. I guess she thought the Catholic holy water was better than nothing, and it must have worked because Mrs. Crane never got struck by lightning. On the day of the hurricane, my mom calmed Mrs. Crane down and promised she'd get the holy water while my dad parked the car where there were no trees. First, Mom lit some candles because the electricity was out. Then she took the holy water and sprinkled some on Mrs. Crane. Everyone else wanted to be sprinkled too. Mr. and Mrs. Morin and their daughter, Althea, who lived in the apartment upstairs, came down. I guess they thought, with all the voices and everything, that it was a party. We crowded around the windows and listened to the wind howl and watched it blow stuff all over the yard. Tree limbs, lawn furniture, garbage cans, even a bird bath. Then it got really quiet. We looked up and saw a little round patch of blue sky through the dark clouds. That's the eye of the hurricane, my dad told us. I didn't see any eye, but before I could say anything, the wind picked up and the rain started all over again. I hope the new house is okay, my dad said as the wind roared by like a freight train. My mom pulled a book off the shelf and started reading a story to Buddy, Carol, and the Adams twins, the Fornier brothers, and yours truly, just as she read to Buddy and me every night. Finally, 3 hours later, the hurricane of 1938 was over. People started coming out of their houses. Do you have electricity? Someone shouted. No, do you? Someone answered. I pestered my mom with so much that she let me go outside with Carol and her father, Buddy, and my dad. Branches large and small and leaves were everywhere. We could hear sirens wailing. We walked to Hemlock Grove, a small forest of tall hemlock trees at the end of the block. It was a mess. Be careful. I don't think it's all that safe, one of the neighbors told us. Trees had fallen in all directions, crisscrossing each other like a giant game of pickup sticks. Some of those trees stayed there for a long time, and after we moved into 26 Fairmont Avenue, and I felt brave, I'd take the shortcut to Columbus Avenue through Hemlock Grove. One tree lay across a little stream, and if you had good balance, you could walk across it. I guess 1938 was a special year, not only because of the hurricane, but because it was the year we started building 26 Fairmont Avenue. The end. That's all we have time for today. Thank you for listening. Join us next week for more bedtime stories.